Well, time to return to our series on New Zealand sporting history now. And a real treat today, sprint kayaker Dame Lisa Carrington is our most decorated Olympian of all time. Between London 2012, Rio 2016 and Tokyo 2020, she has won a total of 5 Olympic gold medals and a bronze, and she's won 10 world championships. She was promoted to Dame Companion by Queen Elizabeth II in her 2022 New Year honours for services to canoe racing. And to talk about her illustrious career, which is still far from over, it's a pleasure to welcome Dame Lisa Carrington to the studio. Hello.
Hi.
Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to see you.
It's quite special, isn't it, getting one of the last honours from Queen Elizabeth?
Yeah, it was, and then when we were inducted, it was King Charles. So,
oh, was it?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I mean, her portrait was still on the wall, but our Governor General was over at the Queen's funeral. So, yeah, it was quite unique, and I guess it was a nice time to celebrate her. And then, celebrate King Charles coming in.
So, yes, I see what you mean. So it was technically handed out by her, but by the time you received your award, it was
inducted by him.
Yeah. Where were you when you got the honour? In Wellington at Government House.
It was, yeah. It was amazing. I mean, such beautiful grounds. And then to be around the other recipients, so and what that achieved, it kind of makes me feel like, man, I've been doing this thing for myself and sport, and these other people have been progressing New Zealand, Māori culture, health, and, I feel, a little bit inadequate.
You might not necessarily have got into canoeing for other people, but you must know what we've got out of watching you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I guess I'm lucky because I've been in the sport for so long. So I get to, from when I started and then the continuation over, over the last decade. It's been really special to kind of also see the young athletes that may have been watching me on TV as 8-year-olds or younger.
Totally.
And now starting to enter their kind of high performance space.
Amazing. And you didn't first get into a kayak because you wanted to become a dame.
No, not definitely on the radar not. At all. Definitely not.
Although maybe thinking about the Olympics or some sort of high level competition at some point in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when we start as, like when I started doing sport as a 5-year-old playing netball, I think, who I looked up to were the Silver Ferns, and that's kind of where I wanted to be one of them. And also just watching the Olympics, seeing the New Zealand Olympians, what they stand for, I think it's super inspirational to want to be like them, the hard work. And I mean, sport just looks so exciting when you're not in it. doing it, I guess it's, I put in the work and I get out some amazing things as well. So,
are you old enough to remember the glory days of the kayaking in the 80s?
No. So, although I think obviously my dad had a good idea that happened. And when I was, I think I was around 15 or 16, Ian Ferguson was holding kayak camps. And so I turned up and, so that's kind of how, and then my dad heard, while they were talking about there were junior world championships and that type of thing. I wasn't listening to that. I was just kind of so nervous to be sitting around just a whole bunch of different people, different ages, and didn't know the sport, what it was. Mm. You got to have those people that can, see into the future.
Totally. So you're obviously a bit of an all-rounder. You played netball at Up to Bay Plenty level. Representing Bay of Plenty. What position were you, by the way?
I don't know if you can tell, but definitely wing attack and centre. I didn't belong at either end of the court.
Yeah.
So, I think I loved it. Having such supportive parents, my mum, she would be my coach, the managers in the schools, because, we didn't necessarily have the people. I went to a Porikī school, Waitahi Valley. So, you relied on the community then moving up when I was growing up to Whakatane High School and then, entering the Bay of Plenty and I guess having those people like my parents to go, let's go to a trial, let's go to Bay of Plenty trial and see how it goes.
So when did you first get into a kayak?
I first got into a kayak when I was, 16. And, you know, no idea. They're incredibly tippy. I don't know. I would say not many people have ever been in one, but 100% you'll fall in.
Now, it's probably a good time for me to tell you, Dame Lisa, that I do kayak fishing
To
a very, very poor level. Often get tipped out in the waves on the way out or the way back in. Sometimes get a bit of success, but yes, I'm a kindred spirit. However, I think my fishing kayak is built for flotation. Like, it's very hard to tip out of that. It's designed for people like me. But tell me about the kayaks you're in.
The kayaks, they are, you know, around 5 meters long, 12 kilos, and they are designed to go as fast as you can. So they're very, very tippy. We don't like wind and choppy conditions. So you won't see us out on the ocean, just somewhere pretty calm on a lake, river.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And can you remember much about those early experiences and realizing that this might be something for you?
Yeah, I guess for me, I kind of, as I look back and I gradually kept going because I was achieving a little bit of success as a youngster. Mm. So, you know, winning some races, national races, being selected for development teams, and then being selected to represent New Zealand in a under 18 kind of capacity. And I think for me, it was like, okay, I'm all right at this. Maybe I can go somewhere. I didn't put in the work. So, well, I did. It was, I guess I did lots of different sports. So growing up, while it was netball, it was volleyball, surf, lifesaving, and then starting to kind of figure that, okay, I need to put a bit more time into this sport. And then gradually, I guess, compared to the rest of the world, yeah, very late into getting into kayaking.
Really?
You
ditched netball.
I did. I ditched netball because I, you know, it seemed that representing New Zealand and the Czech Republic in the last year of high school was seemed a little bit more important. Mm. And yeah, so, and also, I didn't want to catch the bus to school, so I was allowed to take the car to school if I had training in the afternoon, so that was a really nice incentive for me to keep going.
Yeah. And you kept winning.
Yeah, so I guess not at the start. So when I was, you know, when I went to that Junior World Championships as a, you know, last year of high school, I think I was placed maybe 12th or 13th overall.
What year was that?
That was in 2007.
Yeah.
So that's my last year of high school. Mm-hmm. So, and I was quite a bit off the pace. I mean, the girls that were winning at that age group would be doing quite well as an open athlete at our World Championships. So really you're competing against girls around the world from Hungary, Spain.
Girls have been kayaking basically since they were a fetus.
Yeah.
Practicing training and training all through their childhood.
Yeah, absolutely. And having the resource, the coaching and the support from a really early age. Mm. But in saying that, me starting a little bit later meant that, you know, my training age was just a little bit younger than them. So by the time, you know, I started developing and getting a bit more support, understanding what it took to be a professional athlete, to be a good kayaker, technically, all the things that come along with going fast, I developed those a little bit later.
We hear a lot about burnout, and I wonder if that might be something that you avoided. I'm sure you have your moments, but, you know, for those girls you're up against at those junior world champs, I imagine a lot of them must have hit 22, 23 and almost had nothing left.
Yeah, I think it's tough too because those countries have amazing athletes as well. So they also, I guess there are athletes that are a bit older than them that are blocking the pipeline in a way. So they will just be a bit faster. So you may be the best in the world, but you could be fifth in your country.
Right.
So I think that, you know, those bigger countries, they do have those challenges.
Wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah.
Back to what made you good at it. I mean, I suppose you could say this about a few different sports, but it seems to me that kayaking is almost uniquely a combination of strength, endurance, technique, a few different things coming together.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially because you're in such an unstable platform. So, I mean, anyone can kind of jump up and down on the ground, but trying to do, you know, when it's flat, it's safe. And in the boat, it's, you know, the challenge is staying in whilst putting the most amount of power and force down that you can in every stroke. So there is a lot of stability.
So what is the skill required to keep the boat? Is it core strength?
Yeah.
To keep it?
Yeah, and feel, I think you've just got to have some counter, so counterbalance. And also, I think it's that awareness around what are the edges that I'm going to fall in.
I'm talking to Dame Lisa Carrington for our series on New Zealand sports history. When was the last time you tipped?
Last time I tipped? I can't remember the last time I tipped unintentionally. but I mean, I just don't want to fall in. So, but yeah, like we are doing lots of drills that kind of challenge that, because even at my level, I do get afraid of falling in. So it's kind of like, okay, what's the worst that can happen? Where are my edges? How long will it take me to fall in? So, yeah, we do lots of skills and drills to kind of challenge that, especially when we're racing, we're an outdoor sport. So conditions, weather, you know, it'd be choppy, it could be windy. So we've got to be able to line up and compete in whatever conditions are there.
How different are the canoes to the boats the rowers use?
Well, I actually haven't been in a rowing skiff. But, yeah, look different. I mean, they go backwards, we go forwards.
Yeah, that's an obvious one. Do you take your own kayak to the Olympics?
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. So we use they're around the world. They travel. I mean, right now it's a little tougher to get things places, but fortunately our boats are made in Portugal, which means that...
closer to everything.
Yeah, closer to everything. We have storage facilities over there. So
so it always feels the same when you get in.
Yeah, so every boat I have... I mean, this for the Tokyo Olympics, we had a I had a special boat made, and that travelled with me from... it was made in Portugal. I raced in it in Hungary in 2019, brought it back home to train in, and then took it back to Tokyo. Mm. So it's been around.
Do you name them?
I did. I named my last boat. It was really special to me, this one, because it was made of a really good material, so strong, stiff, to go faster. And I named it Te Huia because I guess for me, like the Huia bird is
rare and precious?
Yes, rare and precious, absolutely. And they kind of they're collective feeders. So, you know, the male will feed a particular way. I don't know if you have seen, but their beaks, female beaks are different. Mm. So they feed together. They bring their food back home to their colony or whatever you are, their family.
Yeah.
And they share it. So for me, it was when I guess that kind of represented how I wanted to compete in Tokyo. I wanted to... I guess, have my medals or my success that I would have in Tokyo to represent everyone at home. So Aotearoa, my whānau, all those types of things. So I just really love that the Huia bird go out and feed, you know, find food and bring it home for others.
I love that. And while we're on the topic, I've seen you described as the most influential Māori sports personality for the past 30 years. Have you found yourself connecting more to your Māoritanga over the course of your kayaking career?
Yeah, I think, I guess I've been really lucky in the last few years or last year being able to connect with Stacey Morrison. And I think
that's not a bad person to connect with.
Yeah,
she's
yeah. Yeah, so I think for me, it's just having the confidence to, you know, link back home. And I think too, it's, you know, growing up in Whakatane and Opotiki, around me there was a lot of culture and Māoritanga, and I guess for me it's like now I've left home, I live in Auckland, it's really important that I kind of take a lot more responsibility and accountability for that journey. So it is something that I want to continually work on, and I guess it is a journey. It will take some time.
Yeah. You didn't ask to be the most influential Māori sports personality over the last 30 years.
No.
So it's a role you find yourself in and have to find your own way through, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I guess, you know, New Zealand is diverse, and I just represent a different story to lots of, you know, we've got a lot of amazing Māori who are in sport and in across the board and whatever they're doing, so arts and that type of thing. So I guess I just represent my way, my journey. Yeah.
And would it be fair to say that maybe in the past, Māori haven't naturally drifted towards the sports of kayaking and rowing?
No, definitely not. And I guess that's something that's, you know, especially in the high performance area around individual sport, that's something that's not necessarily looked into and not as available. So when I grew up in Whakatane, there was no kayak club or canoe club. So I had to go elsewhere or just do it on my own. So, yeah, I was out there by myself training. But I did start in surf lifesaving, which, you know, huge has a huge culture of together looking after the ocean and community. So that's how I drifted into you know, canoeing. But now what's awesome is a few years ago we started a canoe club in Whakatane. So now the kids can go down and enjoy that. And, yeah, like would love to have a just continually grow that kayak community.
Back to your early career then. And was it always going to be London 2012, that first Olympics you were going to focus on?
Like, I think, so I first made a senior team in 2009.
Okay. So too late for 2008. Was that Beijing?
Beijing, yeah. So that was, yeah, absolutely. I was not capable. And also, Erin Taylor, she was our first female to attend the Olympics, and that was in Beijing. So, in a way, our high performance or... First female kayaker, sorry, to represent New Zealand was in 2008. So really, our history as female paddlers isn't that long. And I guess it's exciting because we have come quite far quite quickly.
Totally.
Yeah, but no, London 2012 wasn't necessary. It was definitely an aspiration. I didn't know that I could do it because at the time... say in 2009 and 10, my best placings in the world were like 9th and 10th, and they were in team boat races. So, and we had to qualify for the Olympics, we had to place top 8 in the world. And in the same, we, you know, the New Zealand Olympic Committee also have their own standards where you must place in the top half or top 16 to represent New Zealand at the Olympics. So, yeah, I guess at that point in those few years leading in, it wasn't necessarily, it was something I wanted to do, but I didn't know if it was possible. And then in 2011, I managed to win the K1 200. I had an opportunity to race.
At the World Championship.
Wow. So really it was, you know, my coach, who is still my coach at the time, who now, Gordon Walker, I wasn't, in 2011, I wasn't supposed to be racing the K1 200 metres. So only earlier that year did he kind of push me into racing an individual race at a World Cup.
K1 200, 200 metres long and all about the sprint, right?
Yes, yes.
Just go hard.
Yeah, go hard. And it requires, like, it's not a 100 metre track, so that's going to take you 10 seconds. It's 40 seconds long, so... yeah, you've got to be super strong, a lot of power, but still have a lot of fitness. So, yeah, I love – it's a race I love.
Do they have a K1 100?
No.
No. The 200's the shortest.
Yeah. Yeah.
And set the scene for us in London, because I imagine the first Olympics is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it was. And I remember we were lucky enough to sit down with Hamish Carter going into – 2012, and he just, I mean, you get to learn so much from other people's experiences. So he said something to us, and this was with myself and Erin, who was my teammate. We also raced the K2 500 metres, and so, you know, he said it's important to, you know, acknowledge and embrace the Olympic vibe and what's happening. It's definitely is exciting, but not let it distract you from what you're there to do. So I remember going there incredibly naive, but so excited to be there. It's a huge dream just to be an Olympian. And I think it's awesome to look back and remind myself, you know, not this isn't something that everyone gets to do. So, yeah, it was a really cool time, and I loved doing it with someone else. So Erin had been to 2008, so she had experienced it before, so that was really comforting for me.
She's in the boat with you for the
K2 for the 500. K2 500 as well, yeah.
Tell me about the K1 200 then.
Yeah, so
Were you a favourite?
Yeah, so I'd gone and I won the previous year, but also there was another peddler from Hungary who was also a favourite at the time, and I just remember lining up, probably 20 seconds before the start, and they had the speakers, it was a really loud heartbeat, and it was kind of going off, and
playing a heartbeat over the speakers.
Yeah, what a way to kind of put people off. But
wow.
Yeah, so a loud heartbeat, and it got faster and faster, and I was like, okay, no. Just stay in the moment.
Oh,
and,
my gosh.
It was amazing. If you think of Tokyo, where we had no one in the crowds, and in London, there were thousands of people watching.
Was it on the Thames?
No, it was at Eton Dorney. Uh-huh. So it was around 2 hours out of London. And it was amazing. My family were there to watch me. It was such a cool... And also, lots of other... So the rowing, we use the same course as the rowers. So they were there watching. We were lucky enough the week before to watch some gold medals being won by the Kiwi pair. So Eric Murray and Hamish Bond. So, and even Mahe Drysdale, we were able to watch them race. And so it was really exciting to kind of be a part of that. And I remember sitting at the back of the bus and seeing... on the way to the course and seeing Mahe, thinking, wow, I was just this young kid at the time, the nobody. So it was really cool to be able to, have those memories.
And the final went well.
Yeah. And I think I actually watched it not too long ago. And it's funny what you think. So I guess all the way I remember thinking, I don't have to win this race, but I want to. I guess in a way it was just taking the pressure off that I didn't have to. What it's going to take is, some real grit, and I had to work hard for it. So, yeah, and I remember crossing thinking, wow, I can't believe I've done that. That's amazing. But when I look at it over, from the footage, I'm like, wow, I was really close there. It was quite a close race. And when you finish, I won. And I mean, that's all it is. You just got to cross the line first.
Yeah. Is it a pure measure of who's fastest in the world at that time? Or does it come down to some people having a good race and some people not? Like, do you have good and bad races?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's totally what it's 100% what it's all about. I mean, you've just got to, who can turn up and do the best performance? And some people will have performances out of their skin, and then some will not perform at all. But that's the challenge of what we do, is being able to turn up and do what you can, because it's hard enough just being normal. Turning up, there's pressure, expectations, the idea that you have only, my long, the K1 500 metres, that's like a minute 50. So you've got this one moment in time to do your best race you can. So it's just being able to turn up and do that.
Had you had any brain work ahead of that Olympics?
In 2012? No. So, I mean, a little bit. I mean...
It's a weird way of asking the question. I'm asking about psychologists.
Yeah, I think definitely little bits and pieces, and just basic tools and techniques to be able to enjoy being in those pressure situations. And
But that's not nothing, right, to be sitting there at the starting line, having the blooming heartbeat going over the loudspeakers, and still be able to perform your best. That must be something innate about you, I guess.
Yeah, but I think too, I was pretty inexperienced at the time, and I was only, 23 at the time. So I look back and I feel like I was incredibly naive, and all compared to now anyway. I definitely had some techniques to manage that pressure to be able to turn up every day and try to do the best, but... Mm. I think, from that point till now, the pressure's only increased. I've learned so much more about myself. I need help to do that. Yeah.
Good celebration for that one?
Yeah. Yes, there was. Just thinking that, it was really nice. I mean, we weren't in COVID times, so we were able to celebrate it with the public, with our family and friends. So, it was really cool.
Where's that gold medal now?
It's sitting in a box in the wardrobe with my other medals.
Yeah, cool. okay, so that's London 2012. Then off to Rio in 2016, and I guess by now you really are the one to beat. How different is it going to the Olympic Games as the existing gold medal holder, as someone who's been there before? Is it a different experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So no more of that, I guess, not as much naivety. The pressure, the expectation definitely was much greater. And I guess looking back at Rio, I don't know that I performed my absolute best. But like I said before,
that's depressing for the other competitors, considering you won the gold.
Yeah, and I guess that for me, once I won that K1 200 meter medal, it was like, oh wow, that's what I'd wanted to do, is just be able to do that again. And I think, yeah, like I would, that's what I learned. I think you learn so much from those situations, and I knew that I hadn't quite done my best physically, and I knew that I could do better also mentally. I wanted to be able to turn up more of myself, more of who I was on a daily basis. But I mean, the expectation is to do that, but it's incredibly hard. So I guess going into Tokyo, I knew that.
Pleased to get a medal in the K1 500 at Rio?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was the world champion in 2015. So for me, that was also a huge race. Mm. And I didn't really appreciate going in the challenge of competing in two events and trying to do my best twice. Because, you know, the emotional and mental energy it requires to lift and race. Mm.
Is there a decent gap between them?
Yeah, they were on separate days, so there was decent. So there was over 4 days.
Yeah.
So the K1 200 were on the first two, and then the K1 500 were on the last 2 days.
And I don't imagine you think about the 500 at all until that final for the 200 is over.
Well, it's hard not to. Yeah, like the reality is that that is the hardest race. The K1 200, I really enjoy it. I feel, you know, I have a lot more confidence in that race. But what worried me the most was the K1 500.
Mm.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's
like going from 200 metres to 800 metres on the track,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, too, it's also about what comes with winning a medal. So for me, when I won the gold, the high, the excitement, you know, going out, they call it like the media scrum, you know, everyone's in there telling you what you've done is amazing. Mm. And yet to be able to turn up the next day and start from scratch. You can't pretend that that didn't happen.
I guess physiologically there's adrenaline and...
Yeah, and also how I prepped for it. So for me it was, I guess it's just so big winning a gold medal. You know, that is taking you, you know, I'd finished a race, a huge accomplishment, to then turn up the next day and not... you know, to go, okay, I'm good. My feet are still on the ground. Mm. And okay, let's start again.
But in a way, your brain thinks you've done it. You know, you've succeeded.
Yeah, and it's hard
to come
back. You've
got to get up to that intensity again. Wow.
Yeah.
Look at me talking knowledgeably like I've ever competed in any sport. Okay. So at that point, Dame Lisa Carrington is my guest today. We're talking sports history, and that made her our first female competitor to win two medals at a single Games. Incredible. And then off to Tokyo 4 years, well, I guess 5 years later, with COVID restrictions. And what did you enter in Tokyo?
In Tokyo, I was in four events. So the K1 200, K1 500, K2 500, and the K4 500.
Okay, so you didn't learn your lesson about like focusing on different things.
Doing this. Yeah. No, yeah. So I guess after Rio, I knew that I needed to be challenged a bit more and to get... to personally be better. It was like entering into a team boat and being challenged in that way, finding how, you know, mentally, how I could challenge myself. I think when, as an athlete, when you win so often, especially winning gold medals at the Olympics, I guess you want to protect that image, so it's not easy to...
You don't want to do something unless you've got a chance of
succeeding.
And
because I guess that fear of being judged because we've been built up so much that it's quite scary to be, to be judged because you've heard so much, oh, I'm amazing, or someone's told me I'm amazing. That means I have to stay amazing, so I won't do anything that's going to change that.
Yeah.
So for me,
It was a risk.
Yeah, absolutely, it was a risk. But I wanted to do it with other people. So for me, I have both. I want to perform and grow and be successful individually, but I love doing it with people. So for me, it was kind of entering into that space where I can start, you know, challenging myself differently.
Third gold in a row in the K1 200. And you get one in the K1 500, your first Olympic gold.
Yeah.
Must have been really special.
Yeah, and yeah, absolutely. For me, in Tokyo, that would have been I think the K1 500 is like my nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the event that challenges me the most. It scares me the most because I know I can do it, but I know that it's going to take a lot of myself. I can't just go, I'll just give it a go and I'll put in 90% and I'll still win. It's more like, okay, I've got to put in 100% and then we'll see how we go. So for me, it's the most vulnerable race, tactically, strategically, physically, going into it. It's basically I have to race that race how I am scared to race. So I have to go out hard from the start and kind of, obviously it's paced, but knowing that it will hurt in the last 50 metres, that's what I'm scared of.
You ever change your game plan partway through the race?
So never changed my game plan, but it changed the strategy. There's a strategy. So different pacings, different, you know, where you go off the start for the first 50 metres is pretty as hard as you can, settling into a running speed that is just above comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, hang on.
So, gold in the K1 200, gold in the K1 500, fourth in the K4 500, and gold in the K2 500.
Yeah.
You talked about that being a risk. You're sort of leaving your fate in the hands of someone else, which must be hard as a solo athlete. So that must have been cool as well to prevail.
Absolutely. I mean, I was so fortunate to be racing with Caitlin Regal, who is an incredible paddler. So as much as, you know, she was also putting her, the same day. So I won the K1 200 the same day as I won the K2 500. So that was an incredibly tough day. So she had to trust me to turn up and be my best because I won the K1 200 before even getting into the boat for the K2 500. So, I mean, it was amazing. I remember going down the warm-up lane before the race and, you know, there's always that for me, there was that anxiety that, you know, maybe I'm not going to be my best. And having that scary thinking, okay, I've just raced three races before this one and this is really important and I've got someone else who is relying on me. And she just says to me, she's like, you know what, all I need is just you to be you. It doesn't matter, whatever you've got, this is the boat, you are the person I want to paddle with. And for me, that was like, okay, that just released me of the worry and the anxiety. And in a way, I would say it would have made me paddle better because I stopped worrying. And it's okay, let's just go. The only place I'm just going to do my best and not worry, you know, if it's not my absolute best. It is what it is. And thinking, and also to just do it with someone. And for me, it meant just finishing the line and being on the podium with her was so cool.
I mean, I love that.
It meant so much to her. And we were the first New Zealanders to win, or females to win a team medal at the in the Kind Kayaking.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, that's, you know, we were up against countries like Hungary, Germany, that are just so strong. They'd won that event for the past, I don't know how long, forever.
Took one off them.
Yeah, we took one off. They weren't too heavy. So, I mean, those experiences, and yeah, there was a lot of hard work, but, you know, for that moment, it was incredible. I always remember that.
You must feel so close to someone you've won a medal with.
Yeah, and, you know, we'd been training side by side for the past 5 years leading into that moment. Mm. So you know each other pretty well. and to, I mean, to put in the work and achieve something. I know not everyone gets to do that. You know, now she's a mum, she's got a little girl. So, you know, she left the sport, you know, with a gold medal, and it's awesome.
Paris.
Yeah.
Less than 2 years away.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's so close. It's crazy. Like, I've been, you know, when I talk to people about it, we have qualification in 2023. So that's next year in August. We have to qualify for these Olympics. And it's, you know, coming back to it, I want to be able to help my team get more than just myself, or even, you know, I still have to qualify. You never know what can happen. So I guess it's just that it's so important that we are doing our best today to make sure that we qualify for the Olympics.
We saw on Facebook a fan letter from an 11-year-old girl called Sienna. She sent you the letter. She says she's glad you're standing up and proving that girls can run the world. It's nice, eh?
Oh, it's so sweet. And I mean, you know, the language, the words she used, I mean, oh, it's wicked. And that, you know, that makes me feel pretty good.
And she said, I hope you're proud of yourself.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it is challenging at times to be proud, to find, to, you know, to accept or acknowledge that I did a good job today. Because and what I do and how I know I get better is I'm always trying to find the opportunity to be faster. Where am I better? Where can I be better? Or finding, you know, reassurance that I'm good enough. But instead of, you know, I guess removing those things and going, you know what, yeah, today was a really good day. I'm proud of myself. I did something that I can't always do. Or I know that, especially in sport, you know, it's physical. And I know that I can't do this for the rest of my life. Or not, I don't know how much longer I can.
But you're going to Paris.
Yeah. And I think it's just making sure that, you know, I check myself and have the gratitude and perspective that I've been working so hard physically, mentally, so keep going while I've got it.
Dame Lisa Carrington, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me.